Okay. So I say we start, let's just review very quickly the Yarama's view of Runya. And that'll take us straight away to the Pshara discussion. Everybody enjoy the Pshara Makoros? Yeah, Ned, you like it a lot? Yeah, it's good. Okay, great. And then we could decide together whether we want to get into this question of Psach Picha Le'ilem. Also comes up in Siman Yud Zayin, part of the question of whether the judge should be advocating for the party if he has a better entitlement under din. So first let's finish the Pshara Din discussion. We're going to look a little deeper into Siman Yud Zayin, the Nosei Kelim, trying to defend the Ramaz reading of the Gemara. Right? And then we can decide after that if we want to go into Psach Picha Le'ilem. Good plan for this sugya? Yeah. Josh, do we have your Chavrusa still?
I think he's switching him.
Yeah? But he's not here today.
Yeah.
Great. He has no iPhone computer excuse.
What?
He has no iPhone computer handling excuse, right?
You'll have to take it up with
him. Take it up with him. Ah, wait a good way to pass on responsibility. Okay, so let's start with the Yadarma. Does somebody give us a quick reminder what happened in our Sigya? What's the background? What happened with Runya? Volunteer? Daniel?
Yeah, Runya once was surrounded by Ravina's land on all four sides, and Ravina wanted to build a wall between them.
Sounds like he did build a wall also, right?
He built a wall and wanted to pay for it. And tried getting it to pay for the most expensive, which is half, and then it went down to, and ended up going down to the material. So then, and then he never ended up doing it, so then Ravina paid off. He made a sly move on him, where he pulled his share property, but steal vegetables from him, from Runya. Runya stopped protested, then he said, clearly you want something.
Right, so clearly Runya benefited. That was Ravina's stratagem. And then what happened?
So then they went to Rava, and Rava said that Runya kind of has to pay the price that he would be appeased with.
Yeah. So then they went to Rava, and Rava said, what was his move? This is the key line. He said, apparently, to Runya, Zil paise b'maide fayis, go, you know, make amends with Ravina or whatever he's willing to take from you. And if you don't make amends with him, you're going to be on the hook for a lot more. Yes? That was Rava's strategy. And the problem that the Rishonim are troubled by is what?
On what grounds does Rava have to make such a confusing
basis? Yeah, what's the basis? And you have a Miman of Shach here. If Ravina is entitled to get the full amount, Rava should have just paskin the full amount. And if Ravina is only entitled to get the lesser amount, then he should have just paskin the lesser amount. What's this idea that, well, pay the lesser amount, and if you don't, I'll put you on the hook for more, right? So Tosos toys around with the idea that maybe Runya was only on the hook for the lesser amount, and maybe Rava was just trying to intimidate Runya. Tosos rejects that possibility, but Tosos does find us other cases in the Gemara where Namura or Tana makes this threat, right? Either do this or I'll penalize you much more. So that's at least one possibility, which implies that the Meikar Adin amount is the lesser amount. One possibility. Tosos rejects that. And the other way of reading this line is that Meikar Adin, for sure, Ravina is entitled to get the higher amounts. Right, half the costs of the wall, but Rava allowed for Runya to pay less. Why, Daniel?
Because we want Dustin to have peace and to create peace. And
those are your words. What does the Yadarma say? What's the Yadarma's explanation? No.
Right? Because the Mitzvah Lipsoa, they get to compromise.
Yeah. There's a mitzvah to compromise. Bitsua here is the same as pshara. And because there's a mitzvah to compromise, Rava pushed the parties to settle for this lesser amount, correct? So he says, once Rava realized that Ravina was content with getting less, Rava therefore did not paskin the dina meikara lechiyuve, right? So Rava didn't paskin the meikara din amount. What did he do instead? He said, just pay Ravina whatever he's willing to settle for because there's a mitzvah livtsoa. So the mitzvah livtsoa explains Rava's psak, or Rava's refusing to paskin meikara din and saying, go settle for that amount. Yes? Okay. So, in our understanding of this line, is it our view that Rava is paskining or imposing a settlement in any way? Or he's just saying, don't waste my time. There's an offer on the table. Work it out amongst yourselves. And if you can't work it out amongst yourselves, then come back to me and I'll make you pay me the higher amount. What's your impression just from this line about what's factually happening here?
You said from the lo pasach rava ledine meikara. It's unclear whether it's saying lo pasach rava ledine meikara, so he didn't paskin the ikara din meikara, but of course he paskin bitsua, or he didn't do any psak at all, but it worked with psak, so really
he didn't. Yeah. What's your preferred reading?
I think bitsua is probably like outside of Jason.
Yeah, he threw them out.
Yeah.
Right? Meaning, you don't need me to be involved. Be mefayasim. He's happy to be appeased for less. Take care of it on your own. Call me if you need me. That's my sense of what's going on here in the Yadarma. But Eitan,
how would you explain it the last part of that line in the Gemara where it says, if not, then go to
Eitan. V'ilo dainino l'chak Rabbi Yosi. If you guys fail to reach an agreement on the terms of the pious.
Isn't that saying Eitan's still involved?
Yeah, come back to me then, right? So, you're trying to, you know, there's a lawsuit, but hey, he's very happy to take less, so why don't you just pay what he wants? Because if we get into litigation, you're going to go for more. That's all right. So the ELO, if you fail to appease each other, then Daniel is like, Dina, correct?
No, that's not right.
Yeah. I think that's the way to read it, Daniel.
But what is Ravina's incentive to go for this bitsua then?
Why isn't he pressing his rights for more?
Yeah, like, once he's so like, oh yeah, we try to compromise with him, but if not, I'm just going to go up to him, we try to do that, yeah, you got to pay him the higher amount.
Yeah.
What's his incentive then?
Yeah, what's the psychology here, right? First of all, where did Harry start?
I'm not sure. He has a big midterm today, so.
To do that. Half a second to go, I'm not sure. Speculate about his whereabouts. So you want to know what the psychology is, right?
Yeah.
You want to know what the psychology is. So what's the incentive? Anybody have a suggestion, Eitan?
And then you don't have to go to court and deal with court. It's a long time.
Yeah, you know, maybe there's like annoyance to go to court. It's like litigation is annoying and expensive, or maybe... What else, Romy?
I was going to say, first of all, I don't think that's such a good argument because he went to Rome in the first place.
Okay.
But also, I think that's where the Gemara, or you could rely on the fact that he was willing, said he was willing to accept us in the first place. So that indicates that he is willing to engage in that kind of peace here.
Yeah, but why, right?
I think he's only willing to engage because he's wanting money, but now he knows he's going to get the money. If he doesn't engage.
Right. It's actually not clear though that Rava told this to Ravina. Maybe he didn't tell Ravina that he would hold him on, that he would give him the higher amount.
So you're saying this is all behind the scenes. Yeah. He doesn't know what's happening.
Right, there. Right. Runya is saying, I don't want to pay him anything. And then Rava says, pay him what he wants or else you're going to pay more. You're getting a good deal. This is a good offer for you. Right. So there's a way to read it that way.
I feel like it might be easier though to just read it that Robert is paskining that they have to be for sale and then you don't get into this whole mess.
That he's like imposing the b'tzia?
Yeah,
like, it's very hard because it says the elo. Right? What's the other option? If you don't, then I'm going to hold you on the
hook. It's up to, I guess there's a mission for them to do the b'tzia because Rabino Megaladas. And if
Ravina doesn't accept, then if he does, he's still not willing to accept this book's head, then we're going to have to make him take all of it.
Not sure. I think if were Rava imposing his pshara, the backup option would be much less feasible, right? Just saying, look, this is the din. Right, this is my psak. My psak is to pay the lesser amount.
So like the din, you guys should be doing both sayah.
Right, but it doesn't say, it says v'ilo danina l'chak Rav Yossi. Right, so it sounds like settle on your own. If not, you'll be on the hook for a lot more. That's how I read the Adama. Yeah.
I don't know, I still get confused what the incentive though.
What's the incentive?
Yeah, I just don't know.
Maybe he's a nice guy, he's trying to make shalom.
He's not a holy loan.
Yeah, but he doesn't need the money. He just wants.
Then you already charged him at all.
This is why no good deed goes unpunished, right? So here he's willing to take half, and you're like, oh, why doesn't he give him a full discount?
Yeah, I don't know.
So, fine, let's hold that question for now. So let's look at. So keep that in mind, because this is an important question for when we now look at the Pshara discussion. And I want us to figure out what type of Pshara Rava was doing and what this case tells us about Pshara. Okay. So now we're going to take a little detour to look at the background of Pshara. So I think it's problematic that your average yeshiva guy feels too gung-ho about din. No? Ned?
I'm with you.
You're with me that your average yeshiva guy feels that way, or that it's a problem that you're
having? That's a problem.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's...
I feel that way, though.
You feel gung-ho about it. Yeah. I think this is, it plagues all yeshiva guys. You know, it's like din, and this is what we're learning in Gemara, and we're applying the law, and like what the Gemara says is the right outcome. And then it's just a cop-out of lazy or ignorant dayanim to start sharing all the cases. Zilti is saying, yeah, that's exactly what it is, right? I saw you, you're nodding your head.
I was nodding my head because it's like in approval of what you're saying, not because that.
Okay. But I think there is that mentality out there. It's like Pshara is just this evil cop-out to avoid doing what the Torah wants. Yes, do you guys share that intuition, Zecharia?
I don't know what I'm saying. You know, Mishpat Elokim.
Hashem does...
No, as in a sense, like, you know, the judges are in charge of, you know, implementing the divine,
yeah.
Divine law. Why are you getting involved?
Okay,
who
so... Yeah, okay, good. So I think there is this skepticism of Pshara in general. And here I want to spend a moment to reinforce or clarify the terminology that came up in the last year. Romy expressed some frustration or at least some interest in clarifying the terms. And Ned brought in the Rav Lichtenstein article. Which article are you referring to? Is there an ethic outside halacha? Is that yeah. So I want to spend a moment just to clarify these terms because I think they will help us. So one term is, what do we think is halachic versus outside of halacha? Okay, so halacha, non-halacha distinction. To my mind, anything that's provided for in the Gemara, or the Shulchan Aruch, right, or is going to be a halachic provision, right? It's provided for by the system of halacha. Is that controversial? I think it's maybe you think halacha l'maisa versus not halacha l'maisa. We don't need to get into that distinction. Yes, but if something's provided for in the Shulchan Aruch for the Gemara, that's a halachic provision. You guys with me on that? Okay. Any objections at this stage? Okay, so let me say a little more. So, for example, I think the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara are very clear that there is a concept of shara. That pshara is clearly just as much halachic as the concept of din. Yes? Because the Torah says, do pshara, whether it's preferable, not preferable, whether it's first class, second class, whether it's in a limited set of cases or in a broad set of cases, it's clearly a provision of halacha. So I think for somebody to come along and say that pshara is a non-halachic type of dispute resolution, they're just confused about the meaning of halacha when they say that. You guys agree with me? Similarly, let the record reflect that nobody disagrees. Okay, fine. Ned disagrees. But we'll get to you in a second. Similarly, when we talk about what's the din and what's the lifnin mishuras din, if it's the case that the Torah or the Halacha requests of us, or demands of us in some cases, to go beyond what's required by the letter of the law, that too is a provision of Halacha. Yes? So there's Halachic Din, and there's Halachic Lefnim Yishur HaSadin, and all of these are Halachic provisions. Yes? And it's like, well, this doesn't make sense. What I'm saying doesn't make sense.
How can it be both in and out at the same time?
I didn't say it's out. I said it's fully in.
But if it's above the letter of law, and I see the letter of law.
Then well, I think you're just confusing this concept of din with the concept of halacha.
So, can you say like it's
one second. So we're really here just to allow you to think clearly. This is the purpose of today's share. No, I'm kidding. So that's what I want to say. I think that's true right now. And this solves all those quasi-paradoxes that Ned's worried about. Is there nothing outside of halacha? But right now, we're just going to think of what halacha provides as that which is halacha. So the lefnim yishurat hadin is halachic. Pshara is halachic. Just as much a din, just as much a provision of halacha as shvuas motiv mitzvahs is. Okay? Let me say further that you'll find something in Shulchan Aruch called and in the Gemaras in Sanhedrin and Yevamos that Bez Din Makin Ve'Onshin Shalom in Adin. Anybody come across those? That Bez Din sometimes has extra legal power, right, or an extra judicial power or a special power.
Extra
law. What?
Extra law.
Don't use that term. No, it's the wrong way of thinking about it. Bezin has this extra din power. That's a provision of halacha. Okay, it appears in Shulchan Aruch. It's provided for in the Gemara. So I don't know what your conception of halacha is if you think that the Gemara telling you this is what the Jewish legal system provides for, if you say that's somehow non-halachic. There are people out there who are conceptually confused. And, they think that there's something non-halachic about these things. And I think we should just agree right now that that's wrong. And there's no basis and rationality to accept that way of thinking about it. But Ned, tell us your view.
Probably I would say they're both Torani. They're not both halachic.
That's just an unhelpful distinction. I don't know what that distinction means. And then we have to get into the five Torah, and then it's going to get really confusing as to what we're talking about. So why don't we just stay with halacha for now? Do you have an objection to thinking of it this way? I'm just curious. You seem very ill at ease. Maybe there is. I don't think we have to go out there, right? I mean, this is all in the Shulchan Aruch. You want to tell me that Mishle is not on the Shulchan Aruch, so it's not halachic, that's fine. But we don't need to go to Mishle. I mean, this appears in the Gemara. This appears in the Shulchan Aruch. What else is your conception of halacha, if not the rules that appear in Shulchan Aruch?
It could comment on something outside of itself. No.
It gets very complicated, and I think unnecessarily complicated to make that move. Let's put it to a vote. Who likes Ned's way of taxonomizing these things?
I don't actually.
Romy's with Ned.
I just think there's important considerations there. Yeah.
What?
There's like some pretty important considerations in what Ned's saying. Yeah.
That's such a. Well, let me say a little further. So that's a halachic non-halachic distinction. But then we can have another distinction between different types of halachos. So we know that there's Or HaKayin, there's Koshim Mishpat, there's Isfahetta, there's Mamon. But we know that halacha itself is a very richly diverse landscape. Yes? So one distinction you have within the provisions of halacha is one between din and rules that aren't necessarily based in din. For example, pshara versus din. Lefnim yishuras hadin versus din. What's the letter of the law? And what's beyond the requirements of the strict letter of the law? compromising versus asserting your particular specific legal rights. Bez din makin ve'onshin as consistent with din, and makin ve'onshin shelo min hadin. That's clearly a distinction within Shulchan Aruch between what's based in din and what's non-din based. Another example, some knassos that we've seen, some penalties, are clearly not based in din. They're there to reinforce certain patterns of behavior, etc. So I think we should think of the halachic landscape itself as being populated with some things that are grounded in din, like the strict letter of the law, and some things that are halachic rules or provisions that are not grounded in the strict letter of the law or the rights of the parties in a particular case. Thoughts on that? Is that a little better?
You're saying just expand the definition of halacha.
I'm not trying to expand the definition.
You're saying halacha is already expanded.
I'm just saying that halacha is a richly it's a richly diverse landscape, right? Which we know already, correct? It's clear to me that halacha contains shara, lifnei mishuras hadin, makan mochin shalom and adin, knasos, right? So I just think it's better, it's cleaner to distinguish internally there and talk about, and these are the terms that the Gemara uses, right? Shalom and adin, shara versus din, lifnei mishuras hadin and din. So I just think that my choice of terms is more consistent with how it's used in the system of halakha. Is that enough to make you happy? I just think you run into unnecessarily deep theological questions that only confuse the mind when you start asking if this is a Jewish requirement outside of halakha. I think you're just setting yourself up for this kind of paradox about what makes it normative if it's non-halakhic. If you phrase it your way, where in my way, it's very clear why it's normative, but the point is that our system of normativity contains different types of values. Sorry?
So just like rude things a little bit. So you would fiercely disagree with the phrase of the Ramban. There's a mitzvah of Kedoshim to you to cover cases of someone who's a Navam or Shus HaTorah, because the presence of Kedoshim to you makes that not Shus HaTorah. As in, when the Ramban used that phrase, he's saying it's not Shus HaTorah if not for Kedoshim to you. But now that we have Kedoshim to you, there is in our halacha to cover certain types of behavior, or Asisa Yashar Latov, that there is a chiyuv to do with Nimi Shus HaDin, or there is a chiyuv to not
even
not
all your shus. So you confuse me. So tell me what the objection is.
I'm just kind of pointing out that on one hand, kind of like there are formulations of, oh, this bit says to cover things that are your shus haTorah. So therefore, are they your shus haTorah or not your shus haTorah? Which kind of
I think my answer there is funny because somebody else asked me that same question.
I'm saying this would push me in that direction.
What's going to push you in that, Sarah?
Saying this idea of Nahal versus the Torah, there's still a mitzvah not to act that way.
No, so I think the right way to read the Ramban is unquestionably that but for this halachic provision, you could have been Nahal versus the Torah. This halachic provision blocks you from being Nahal versus the Torah.
Now it's Nahal Shiloh versus the Torah.
What?
Now it's Nahal Shiloh versus
exactly.
The Torah.
Right.
It's like,
what?
It's like reading against the Ramban.
That's against the Ramban?
It's reading against the Ramban. Like,
my reading is against the Ramban? How's it going?
The Ramban is justifying the need for this
right.
Final mitzvah.
Right, but for without this clause of Kedoshim to you, one could have permissibly been disgusting with license.
Right.
The Torah then blocks that by making a provision so that you no longer could be disgusting with license. What's your view? That the Torah, the Ramban thinks that Lamaskan, you could be Nevel versus Adara? That's how you guys read the Ramban?
If we saw the Ramban and Asisa Yashar HaTov, it was much more clear. It's like, yeah, you're right, there would be gaps, and Asisa Yashar HaTov.
Stop the gaps.
Exactly.
But you guys are reading it differently.
No, I mean, I was just raising it.
Right. But you guys are reading it differently from what I understand, right? You're trying to say that you could permissibly act wrongly for Shus HaTorah? No, clearly the whole point is that you can't. No? Romy and then Daniel.
I'm just kind of clarifying, like, when you, like, what do you do with, like, Agatha or, like, Eta Toba in the Gemara, or, you know, like, all those, like, in that sense, it does seem to me, like,
yeah,
it's called, what other people would call Torah, like, generally, and then Halacha, you're just calling Halacha, and you're saying, all it falls in that general category.
I agree that there are non-halachic aspects of Torah. Maybe some agadotas fall in that category.
Okay.
All I'm just saying is that these legal issues at question today clearly fall in the, into the halachic category. That's my point. I'm not like a halachic man where we have to reduce God to halacha, or right? It's not. It's okay for there to be Jewish things that aren't halachic. But I'm just saying these the things that we're studying in Shir are clearly halachic principles, to my mind. Ned thinks that does violence to his Hashkafas HaChaim. Does it? Does it do violence to your Hashkafas HaChaim to think about that as halachic?
No. No.
Does it elevate your Hashkafas HaChaim to think of it this way?
He doesn't contradict it.
Okay, good. Zoldy, you get the last word on this.
Yeah, no, just to clarify, in your distinction within halacha between like din versus like mitnei shiras din,
yeah,
shara.
I'm just curious how you guys understand
something like, so there's a Shulchan Aruch says it's preferable or obligatory to do shara. So your view is that's not a din? Is that really your position?
That's not a din?
Yeah.
So like the halacha is your view shara. That's not a din.
What?
So your view is that it's not a din.
It's not a halacha.
I'm with you. I am in agreement with you on this.
Right.
I'm saying Ned, in your camp, like, what do your friends say?
I don't know. I think you could say that halacha delegates certain authorities outside of itself.
Yeah, but it's the one that's commanding. All right, so halacha is saying the right resolution in this case is to do din, no?
It's like when Malacha says, follow the men of Medina.
Yeah, it's a principle of
interpretation.
Right. The normative, like the, in the same way that Malacha tells Dayanim to rule one way, it tells them to do Shara in some cases.
Is it possible that Ned's defining Malacha as Din?
Yeah, you're just using the same terms in different ways.
Right.
You're saying
I'm saying it creates, to think of it in Ned's way, I think creates unnecessary paradoxes about the normativity of the rule in the first place. That's all. But Daniel, you wanted to...
Yeah, I'm just curious. Is there, when you say there's a hierarchy within halacha, what beats out what?
Like, I didn't say hierarchy. I don't think I used the word hierarchy.
You haven't. I'm asking.
Is there a hierarchy? No, world? I think it's just different types of provisions that apply in different cases.
Case by case basis.
Right, like when is it better to have din? When is it better to have a kanas? When is it better to have a fnei mishura said that? I think it's... Just like any two dinim that need to be figured out.
But like, for example, the Tumishur Sadin, is there ever a case where it's better to have din over the Tumishur Sadin?
Maybe. We'll have to think about it.
Isn't that going to the nature of the Tumishur Sadin? Like, if you're not supposed to go to the Tumishur Sadin,
well, you might say in some cases you should go to the Mishur Sadin. It's just like Shara. Some cases it's preferable to do Shara. Some cases it's preferable to do din. Or if it takes Zachariah's great reading of Rashi, you know, there's really no consistent rule about which one's preferable. Right, so I don't think we need to find the exact linear hierarchy in order to embrace the distinction. Everybody on board for the project? See, we did so much just conceptual talking right now without even looking at the sigya. Okay,
it's
so let's...
It's the most a priori work.
Yeah, it's the most a priori work. I was reading this... I can bring this in. I was reading this... Well, I'll tell you about it later. It's a very funny thing about my father's shir that I totally stumbled upon by accident. Because why? What?
I'm curious, but...
I'll bring it in, show and tell on Thursday. It's in this book I was reading, and this guy's like, well, most of the authors in this volume are students of Rosenzweig, and this guy himself starts talking about his experience in my father's year. He talks about, like, the a priori structure of setting it up. It was a very, very elegant beginning. Censor out the last paragraph of that thing. Okay, so let's look at the Mechilta. So the Mechilta in Parshas Yisro, quoting, working off the Pasuk, Vishafatati Bein Ish Ubein Re'ehu. So what does the Mechilta tell us? Let's get Rafi. You want to read this for us?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, that's great.
So, before
you tell us about Pshara, what's important about Shafatati Beni Shubain Rehu? What does the Mechilta teach us?
It's when it's between you and your partner, we're having more of a, like more of an intention to do Pshara, in which we're providing both of you, we're making both of you happy at the end of the course of the day.
So, Rafi's right, he tells us that. We have an explanation here about the value of Pshara, or something about the explanation of what underlies Pshara. That's why it's Bein Re'ehu, because Pshara has the capacity that they both leave as friends. Do you see that? I think that's very true as an empirical statement, that when you settle a case, arguably both parties get what they want. Right? So... it's reasonable that both parties, you know, made amends, they worked out an arrangement, they both maybe even agree to it. So they both leave the courtroom content, even on good terms. But there's also Din Ish, that's Din She'ein Bo Pshara, the assumption being that it's litigious, it's hostile, it's antagonistic. One person wins, the other person loses. So Rafi's right that the Mechilta tells us a little bit about the value of Pshara, that you could preserve social harmony, right? That's why it's Bein Re'ehu, they're Niftarim Kareim. But also, the Mechilta is important, I guess this is obvious, because it delineates two different types of dispute resolution. What are the two types of dispute resolution? Din and Pshara, right? Okay?
Well, it's not so obvious here. Here, it's calling
Din
that has within it Pshara, as in here it seems that Pshara is a kind of din.
Yeah. Maybe even here, the Gemara, the Mechilta is just here to give Ned a bad day. And it's saying, well, it's not just that they're, you know, the halakhic landscape is diverse, but even the landscape of din is diverse, and din itself sometimes requires for Ein Bo Pshara and sometimes Yesh Bo Pshara. But the landscape of din itself can call for Pshara in some cases. Right? I think that's a good point, Zecharia. And yes, this definitely reinforces to my mind the sense to which Pshara is certainly halachic. But more than that, even it's a bona fide legal provision. It's a provision of din. Finyan Simen Yud Beis and Choshen Mishpat. And just one aspect of din is to settle cases. Yes? Yeah. This actually touches on something that came up very briefly in Sunday's discussion. I think Romy brought this to the foreground again on Sunday, which was... We spoke about two formulations, one about the role of courts, whether the role of courts is to implement din or to resolve cases. But then we also said, well, maybe the goal of din in many cases is also just to resolve cases. And the Torah is giving us a fair way to resolve disputes. Right? So you might even say that one aspect of the system of din is to create a well-functioning, peaceful society. Yes? It's not necessarily a separate question about the role of courts. Right? So I just want to, you could see that as significant to what Zecharia is bringing out right now. Yes, Zecharia? Okay. So that's the Mechilta. Then we have the Gemara in Sanhedrin Lamed Beis Lamed Beis. The Gemara here has B'tzedek Tishbot Amisacha, Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof. Why do we have two of these B'tzedek Tishbots, or two Tzedeks? And what does the Gemara tell us? Why do we have two tzedeks? Ariel, why do we have two tzedeks? So what's the answer?
Meaning because the idea of tzedek within din and tzedek within shara, that there are two different aspects, I guess?
Yeah. There's two aspects of justice or pursuing justice. One is realized through din, and one is realized through shara. So I think this is very clear. There's a provision in the Gemara for both Dan and for Shara. Yes? Yeah? Good.
Now, what's intriguing about this Gemara is how it presents Din and how it presents Pshar. So what does the Gemara tell us? That's interesting.
Ariel, so what does the Gemara say about, what's the Din type?
It seems to be Din where there would be one case where one person would be more in the right than the other, I guess you could say.
Yeah. So what's the Gemara's case? You have two boats that are trying to pass the straits, a single strait. So what's the point? So the point is only one of them could pass? So what do you do? How should you... So we have a dispute, right? Two people get to an intersection at the same time. If they both move forward, they'll crash. Who gets the right of way?
So it's the tuna, shayna tuna, titla, shayna tuna, mipna tuna. Korba, shayna korba, titla, korba, shayna korba.
So what is din? What's the din resolution?
The din resolution is there was some sort of, I guess you could say, one person had it right of way over the other, and whoever...
Yeah, look for who has the right on their side, correct? So if we're thinking this in terms of rights, who has the right to go forward?
The common courtesy of somebody going down, I'll get the right way, but somebody going uphill in a one lane passage.
Is that the common courtesy?
I believe so.
Gotta review my rules on the road. Maybe in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania it's different. But yeah, there's some rule of justice, of right, which says the person with the bigger load gets the right of way, the person who has the farther path to traverse has the right of way. So Tidkai Krova Vana Krova, the guy with the longer journey gets to go first. I guess that would be the rule to go uphill. The guy going uphill has the right of way. And so there's some principle of right, din, that could be applied to the case to resolve the dispute. Yes? What happens when there's no din to be applied? What's that? Hayushtem krovos. So there's no principled reason to
say one person deserves over the other.
Good. What do you do then?
They should make some sort of arrangement between the two, or they're going to then pay each other.
Yeah. So first of all, this itself is very fascinating. We're going to look later on in the semester. When we get to the second parak, we're going to look at the Coase theorem. Anybody's familiar with that? You should start. We'll talk about it later on.
Coase theorem, the Coase theorem. Ronald Coase was an economist at the University of Chicago. And we'll talk about his theory. But the Gemara here actually anticipates something along those lines. So the Gemara says you do a pshara in this case. So what's the pshara? What form does the pshara take? Are they paying each other?
Okay, so what does that mean? What's the pshara here? Shmuel, do you get a chance? Do you understand the pshara?
I mean, the way we understood it was just that if there's a lack of a defined rule, then, I mean, this is an equation we've been saying this up until now, if there's a lack of a defined rule, then they make something up for themselves.
So I'm asking, what's the particular resolution that they make up that the halacha suggests? It calls it a pshara. What form does the pshara take?
Are you looking for me to say, like, extra din?
I am not looking for you to say anything.
I'm just here waiting to hear how did you understand this line?
Not so much get rid of the base value.
Tell me the base value. Face value is usually the best way to go. Tell me the face value.
They make up a resolution between them, and like ours, that they.
So what's the resolution?
One pays the other for the right to go first.
Yeah, one pays the other for the right to go first. That's the model of schar. What form does that take? It doesn't mean one form of this guy takes out his checkbook and writes the guy a check and then goes.
That was my assumption, yeah.
How much?
What? Whatever they worked out.
How did they work it out?
Through pshara.
What does that mean? You call like a pshara hotline. Yeah, pshara hotline. And say,
I guess we didn't give that much thought to this one.
What?
We didn't give that much thought to this one.
So let's, Ned, You get a how about your chavrusa?
I just had a different point.
Then your chavrusa.
Then the question.
So you're taking us somewhere else.
A little bit.
Okay. Well, not really. One second. I want to get the answer to my question first before you take us somewhere else. Benji?
See, when they bid for it, whoever's willing to pay higher.
Yeah. They bid for it. No?
Isn't it supposed to act as
so is that when they bid for it in a cost, it's a cost-benefit analysis. Meaning, you see how much is the right-of-way. This is classic economics. Economics minor. Shame on all the economics majors here. No, I'm just kidding. Yes. So you do a cost benefit analysis. They bid for the right of way. Meaning what? What do they do? Actually, a very sophisticated position that the Gemara takes. What's a fair resolution? So you see how much is the right to go first worth to each party. So you can imagine each party bidding for the right. And then the party to whom the right to go first is worth more, right? Well, the parties will arrive at an efficient bargain where however much more it's worth it for me to go first, that's how much I'll be willing to pay you for the right. And of course, if for you the need to go first is worth more, then you would offer a higher bid, right? And you would make me an offer at which it's rational for me to let you go first. So you're really maximizing the preferences of the parties by allowing them to bid for the right to go first, right? Whoever is willing to outpay the other one, goes. Now, isn't that a pretty cool solution? Benji?
Yep, brutally honest.
What?
Brutally honest.
Yeah, that's right. Brianna's will be very proud. Now, I want us to think about this. We can think about this a little more, but this, I think, this is what Coase says, actually, for the stuff in the, not about the stuff in the second parak, but in the common law analogs of those cases. Coase says, whenever you're dealing with shenim issues, it doesn't really matter to whom the law assigns the right, whether it's the right for you to use your property and him not to use his, because the parties could always bargain around the right that the courts assign. Right? So if one party really needs to use his property, they could always pay the other neighbor for the right to make noise, etc., etc. We'll come back to that later on, but I just want to flag that the Gemara here actually has that notion in this case, where there's no in-principle reason to let one person go before the other. Josh?
I'm not an economics minor, but wouldn't the wealth of the two parties affect their bids? Like, if one of them's poor, obviously he's going to get outbid, whether or not like it's important then.
So
it could be worth $100 for him to go the right way, but if he doesn't have $100 to give it or else he'll starve, then...
So you're clearly not an economist. Economics minor. Instead, you're a social justice warrior.
Yes. And,
you're worried about how wealth skews cost-benefit analysis. Yes, this is true. This is true. Well, in times of Gemara, everyone is poor, so that solves our problem.
It's like, it does come up.
Yeah, no, it's a huge, it happens to be a big issue. Yeah, it's a big issue that it's not true that you get an efficient solution because that amount of money is worth less to the rich person. But yeah,
I like SAR, you say, oh, how much would you pay to have this not happen to you?
Yeah,
like a rich person would pay way more. So after Ramon does, like,
yeah, it. Yeah, right. So this works in limited cases, but it's a pretty good local solution, right? It's a solid solution, Ned.
So what qualifies this as a shara is the fact that there is...
Let me say something. Josh, it's a good objection in certain contexts, but not in all contexts. Meaning here, it still may be a good solution because the poor person might just get a lot of money then, right, to forfeit his right to go first, which is still a good solution for him.
Unless the options are all bad for him. Unless he really, really needs to get what he needs to get, and...
He can't afford it.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. That's true. So there's going to be cases where it doesn't work, but by and large, it's a pretty good rule. Yeah, fine. Ned, you want to?
So, what makes this shara?
Ah.
Meaning you have a case and you seem to have a defined law. The only thing that seems to be more subjective is the value.
So I think what makes this shara
is that there's no legal. Yeah, what makes this shara? Tell me.
Meaning there is no defined value that they have to pay. It's left up.
Is that why, or is it because the resolution is not a resolution based in justice or rights? It's just trying to figure out a manageable resolution to an impasse.
But rights makes no sense in this context.
Rights make no sense?
And it's not, meaning they both have equal rights.
They have equal rights, correct. So how do we do
that? Why should the halacha not have, why should din not have a circumstance, why should we deal with the case of equal rights? Why does that have to be outside of din?
Why does this have to be outside of din?
Like, so. That seems to be a normal case. It's not something out of the usual. It's not an ordinary. It's not.
Well, you are just assuming that din is supposed to have this hegemony over our lives, right? And as if, but the Gemara is saying din is the rules of right. This just reinforces my reading, right? Din is the rules of right. Sometimes the right of the parties are in equipoise, with neither party having a greater right than the other. What do you do then? You chart it. Find some sort of fair compromise, reasonable compromise. No?
I would think that Shara is, unlike din, which applies set principles to a specific case to arrive at a definite halacha, Shara is more. It's less rigorous.
Why is it less rigorous?
It's not less rigorous. It's less
binary. Seen it here, just
less binary. Less binary. And that's a good thing.
Shara is less binary?
Yeah.
And you're saying here it's too binary?
Yes, here it seems to be too binary.
Because it's just
it's a defined principle. It's saying you have a circumstance, do this.
So does anybody think that
why is it setting the fact it says take into consideration utility? Why is that even a consideration? Should we just do what's the best for these people? Look how it may be.
Well, like Mara's saying, this is probably a good way to do what's best for the people.
So it's probably the way. It's not the only way.
Maybe. Right. Maybe.
This is not what you have to do. This is an option.
I would think, correct. Meaning I would think that you could probably have some shara resolution without going to Milo Sarzulizu. I think that's probably right. You don't like that? Well, this is Hatel Pshara Beinehem. I think we're just saying, what's the reasonable Pshara, this method of cost-benefit analysis?
It's not telling you what to do.
Well,
it's not telling you what to do. It's not telling you an option.
And even if it was telling you this is the right Pshara in this case?
Then it's not really. Then what distinguishes Pshara from then? Nothing. It's definitive law with specific rules guiding the decision.
I think you're raising a very good question, and I think it's okay that Pshara and Din sort of overlap in some cases. I think these legal taxonomies always have gray areas, and you're right that some routine Psharas will become Din. And I similarly think that some Dinim actually are Psharas. So you might say, for example, I'll give this example later on, some Yachlokus in the Gemara, where the Gemara seems to think the din is yachloku, that's really grounded in a pshara. So I do think there are corners where din and pshara will touch.
Okay.
Is that a problem?
Two different words, but I
don't know. There are two different legal concepts that might be very similar in some cases.
Do you think that this Gemara accepts the assumption of the Mechilta?
I do think so.
That they're both, even though the Mechilta obviously says din, uses the word din in both, but really getting the same idea?
I think so. You could say that this Gemara in Sanhedrin is more interesting because it applies Pshara in a case where there is no din. So you might say Pshara has a limited application when there's no din to be applied. In that sense, it provides a little more information than the Mechilta.
But the Mechilta, when I'm just, that just means when the Mechilta says or din, doesn't really mean din, right?
Right.
So then if that, right, and then you could, I don't know what you call it, but then I don't think that's what Ned's saying is the problem, because You're basically just saying these are two ways of pursuit of you know, getting at.
The right resolution.
Just, I don't know,
yeah, is, yeah. That's what I'm saying. There are some cases where pshara is going to be very close.
And they're both paths to getting good justice, and of course they're similar. Because only makes sense that they're
right.
Finally similar because they're both reaching the same goal.
Yeah, and you'll see actually those formulations in the Achronim later on, where they'll say pshara bezeh haynu dino. Did you see those formulations? No, Roman. Did you see those formulations? Anybody get to those formulations in the Achronim where it says pshara is din?
Yeah.
Right, so that's an obvious, that's a very explicit case where they converge, right? Or one reduces to the other.
Well,
so.
But that, I don't know.
We'll get to that. That's comical. So we'll get to that. But I'm just saying this case could be one of those cases where in certain cases, yes, the din is to do pshara. Ned, I don't know why you're having conniptions. Why? Is this nothing here is to be so mystifying. It literally looks like I told you that the Torah was given not at Sinai, but somewhere else. I don't know. Why is this so? It seems like I've upset your spiritual world.
You started off with saying how people think that Shari is like it's not as good as Din. And now you're saying it's din all along.
I'm saying in some cases, yeah, the din is pshara. That's right.
Okay.
That's better for you. That's better than your taxonomy. You started off saying there's Torah, there's pshara, which is anti-Torah, and then there's halakha. Right? I was saying I think my taxonomy is still the path of least less violence. Well, let's see. Let's see more. Okay. Okay. Everybody with me so far?
So in the
two.
So what about the case of pshara?
So I think the case of pshara is that there's no resolution based off justice. So there's no rightful resolution. There's no party who has a greater right to go first. So there's no in principle way to resolve the dispute. So we default to some other type of consideration, like an economic consideration. Really, there's no reason for you to go over the other one. So let's just pick some arbitrary way of doing it that's, you know, makes everybody as happy as can be, and that's the bid for it. Okay? So I think you might say we're moving out of the realm of justice and the rights to just saying we need an arbitrary resolution. It could be, you know, whoever's a lighter shade of green gets to go first.
That's not arbitrary.
Here's a better form of resolution, or at least the losing party gets some cash out of it. That's the Hatzal Pshara B'nai. That's one way of reading it, without saying that this is too din-based. No?
Why didn't you just call it also pursuit of justice? Why didn't you decide that wasn't justice?
The Gemara says, Hatzal Pshara B'nai.
There are no rights between me and you to solve the dispute, so should we switch to a different way of determining what's just in the situation, which is, you know, which one of us would rather go first.
Yeah, maybe, except that maybe Josh is so right that the cost-benefit analysis doesn't really give you a solution in justice, so this is quasi-arbitrary with the way of giving the guy some cash. That's the way of thinking about this. That cleanly takes it out of the realm of jail. Yes? So let me just say a little more. I know you guys are like, I can't believe we spent the whole year on aligning the Mechilta and Babasa. We still have plenty of time to go. All right. We're going to zoom. To push back on Ned even further, I think Ned is thinking that what makes something din is how precisely defined it is in Jewish law. And I'm saying that's not the right way to think of din. Din is maybe about the considerations under the perspective of rights and maybe justice. And the pshara is already saying, no, pshara is like getting to a resolution, putting aside the question of who has the right on their side and what does justice require. Right? We just want a resolution. We want somebody to go first. Yeah?
So you're assuming that what people want is not in accordance with justice most of the time.
I'm just saying that when two people get to an intersection at the same time, sometimes there's no answer under a theory of right and a theory of justice. So we say we need an arbitrary rule. All right, that's my thought. And so what makes this pshara is the fact
that there is no good din answer. We're stepping out of our principles. It's not a principled resolution. It's a resolution for the sake of just resolving the dispute. Yes? Do I need to motivate that idea further? Like, why would we want a resolution just for the sake of resolving one that's totally unprincipled? So, like, my kids fight all the time over toys and things that are so inane that it's really... So, like, my daughter will take a toy, and then my son will take it, and she says, I had it first, he has to give it back to me. And I think under din, she has a good argument. She had it first, maybe. He's always stealing her toys. But from my perspective, it's so trivial. It's just like, give it to him so we don't have to hear him screaming for the rest of the day. Right? Now, I think the point is that the civil harmony of the house is somehow a more important question than the principle of justice about the fair distribution of toy use amongst 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds.
So I need their consent.
Well,
you need their consent.
To do what?
To do show.
I don't need their consent. I'm just saying that we'll get to that. I'm saying the perspective is that it's a resolution for the sake of resolving the dispute, and sometimes like the din is unhelpful. That's my point. Okay? So that's what makes this shara. I don't think Ned has a different way of thinking about it, which is that din versus shara is about how precise the legal prescriptions are. Yes? Okay. So that's something else to think about on this front.
Okay, so now we get to Zechariah's point. So how does this work out with the psukim? Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof. So the Gemara says, tzedek din shecha, tzedek shara shecha, lefiros einecha. Velo sirdof, esa echad yosem rechavero. So Zechariah is going to tell us about his reading.
Yeah, so lo sirdof being the two options. And don't chase after the option of din anymore than you would chase after the option of shara.
I think that's a great reading. All right, so the Gemara is saying that, look, contra the yeshiva guy who's always trying to do din,
really, tzedek tzedek tirdof means both of these are good ways of resolving disputes. Right, that's the halacha's statement. Halacha's statement is, here are two methods of dispute resolution, din and pshara. And there shouldn't be a bias in favor of one principle over the other. Everybody agrees with Kari's reading? I think it's a very nice reading. When I read this Rashi, I thought it meant you shouldn't be biased towards one party over the other. But I think Kari's right. It's not talking about the parties there. It's talking about din and shara. Like the arbitrator, the judge, shouldn't have a preference towards din over shara, or shara over din. You should realize they're both good tools for resolving disputes. Everybody agree with Zechariah's reading, or wants to, anyone want to suggest an alternative? I think it's a nice reading, Zechariah. Okay, fine.
Guys, thoughts on Zechariah's reading?
Rafi, very nice reading.
Yeah, that was a nice reading. Rafi, you like it?
Are they like Chavero? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, Chavero's a little weird. That's what led me to think parties. But tzedek din shecha, tzedek pshara shecha. The thing is the velo sirdof. What did you say? I wouldn't use sirdof. Like, sirdof sounds pursuing. So you shouldn't pursue one party over the other.
And also, it seems like in the Gemara we're doing pshara because, like, oh, but then we don't have to go first, so that we do pshara. So it seems like we like, are being sirdof and then before pshara.
It's interesting. Saying the setup in the Gemara implies that there's a preference like, for...
It's saying, oh, we're, you know, if this guy goes first, he goes first.
Right.
Oh, if they're both, you know, we don't know, then fine, you can do shara.
So, that's an interesting thought,
right? You're assuming that's because it's better as opposed to just because it's a different situation that calls for different...
It seems like it's a later resort, then.
But that might not be because it's actually second.
Right,
it's just because of the different
right.
Scenario.
Right, some cases call for one, like my response to Daniel. Yeah. Okay, so that's the background of the Gemara. The Gemara provides for both of these as possibilities. Now, let's look here. What exactly is pshara? So we have one example in the Gemara, which suggests this bidding war to resolve the dispute. Okay. Let's look at some formulations in the Rishonim to see what they think the judges should be, what principles should they be appealing to when they impose a pshara? So the Gemara Sanhedrin daf vav mid aleph.
The Gemara, just what's interesting here is the Gemara says how many people, how many dayanim or arbitrators do you need for pshara? And the Gemara uses two separate words. The Gemara says bitsua v'shlosha. Bitsua means pshara, and ulechamse pshara v'yachid. And some Rishonim point out that it's strange that the Gemara switches between the two words to mean the same thing. Why it's sometimes called pshara, sometimes bitsua.
And the Tmim Deim here quotes Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Asher Alevi is saying, Yesh letzmoa, lama shina tana zua libidra mer lasham bitzua, ma libidra ban lasham pshara. Why does the Gemara switch off in its use of words? So he suggests that the words connote different things. So let's look at the first daya. Yesh lefaresh. What's the first daya in the Tmim Deim? Who saw this? Schari, you saw it?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
So it suggests so that the judges need to use their own estimation to divide the money in a fair fashion such that no one's losing out more than he should.
Yeah, very tricky legal rule, right? What does that even mean? How are they supposed to know that one person is not losing out more than is right?
You might think that's just din, right? Din tells you what each person is right to lose out. No, Nick?
Unless, of course, you say that they're, I don't know, it depends on, is it there? If it's, the question is, what drives the principles of chart?
I think it's just a principle of loss spreading, almost, right? You want to make sure that no person loses too much. You kind of want to spread the loss between them, make sure that no person is bearing more of the loss than is appropriate or than they can bear.
But it's a little ambiguous. It's not so clear what it means. It sounds like some principled way of just distributing the loss.
Right. Some sort of top-down dayanim deciding.
Yeah, oh, for sure, for sure. And they're deciding it just based off, you know, what's an appropriate way to spread the loss between them. So there is some underlying principle guiding how the dayanim should do the pshara.
So who decides this principle?
What does that mean?
Who decides it? In this case, it was about preventing loss. In the other case, it was about maximizing utility or whatever.
Right. But that also might be a loss prevention, right? So one guy is going to go first, but we want to minimize his losses by getting him reimbursement from the party who goes first.
Right.
Right.
But, unless we... not every case is going to be about loss.
Correct.
So how do you decide which principle applies when?
And yeah,
what
I wish. Totally, I wish the Tmim Deim said more about it, right? But it gives us some guidance here. We're going to look at another formulation in a second. Umad amar pshara biyachid, they call it pshara lashon kal. So the idea is that bitsua is like a sophisticated type of breaking it up. Some Rishonim say it's like bitsua pas, breaking bread, where you try to give like each person on the table the right amount. Like now one gets a big piece, and someone else is stuck with an end piece. The other view says pshara is just lashon kal, it's just like lukewarm, like an easy way of resolving the dispute. She'ain sarich ledaktik bedavar el inyan she'yachal lefasher b'nem yefasher. Like there's no rule for the dayanim. It's like whatever you can do to get the dispute over, that's the way to resolve it.
So literally, what matters is resolving the thing. Doesn't matter how you get to the resolution. Well,
without principles.
Correct. Right? The cult ain't start the dapi the devar. But whatever way you could resolve the dispute, that's how you should resolve it.
The Piskei Arid, I think, has a much more helpful formulation. And I think this
cuts right to the heart of our sugya in Bhagavasya Dapi. What does the Piskei Arid say? What does he think the method for doing pshara is? Rami?
Basically assess all their claims and what they're willing to like take or not take and then see what's there.
So what do you mean willing to take and not take?
Meaning, well, you're saying how not oriented is that?
Well, don't even go to din. I'm just saying what methodology should they be using to impose a right, the correct kind of shara.
Sounds like it's like arbitration.
Well, tell me the, I don't know what arbitration is. Tell me what the Kesherit says.
Assess their claims.
Yeah.
And
well, strictly speaking, he doesn't say assess their claims.
I'll
read the whole bolded phrase.
Okay. So that's how much each party is willing to pay or sacrifice.
Yeah, what does that mean? What does that mean?
That's not about objectively what like should be ruled in a given case. It's about like their expectations or willingness to accept the certain.
Yeah. Yeah. Wanna say a little more? Just to flesh out a little further? So imagine you're sitting on a case, right? You have a claim for $1 million. But you can kind of tell that this guy really just wants $100,000. Right? And you could tell that the defendant, you know, he's claiming that he doesn't owe any money, but you could tell that he'd be happy to pay $100,000. So the methodology for pshara that the RID puts forth is the dayanim should be looking, assessing the arguments to see, to peer behind the claims that are asserted, to try to discern how much is each party, what do they really want out of this? How much are they really willing to pay? How much are they really asking for? And that's the pshara you should impose. So it's really not about who's in the right, who's in the wrong, how much is he entitled to, how much is he owed. It's literally a psychological evaluation about kama yimchol and kama yitin. So you can imagine this. If the parties were going to settle among themselves, right, how much would they have settled for? And a judge should really just impose that amount on them. Do you see that? So notice how you're really stepping away from justice or rights. What are the parties entitled to? And it almost becomes a function of psychologically how much are they willing to forego. So I think what's pshara about that is exactly the fact that this is not a question of right or wrong, who's entitled to what. It's purely a question of making the parties happy. How do you make them happy? By giving them what they actually want out of this, or how much they would be content with getting. And that's a great way to resolve a dispute. Agreed or not agreed? It's really a remarkable piskei rei. Doesn't get enough credit because everyone talks about pshara, but very few people try to explicate what pshara is. And the RID here is a really beautiful theory. Why is this so exciting for us?
Because it's literally what happened in our Gemara.
Yeah, it's literally what happened in Bavavasa.hey, according to the Arama. Argued according to the Arama. And you could even take this and say that's how much Rava should paskin. Right, Rava should really see it didn't come before him. What does pshara require? Pshara requires that you give the parties what they really want. So assuming that Ravina really just wants the agar mentira, great pshara is to impose that amount. Right, Josh? Yeah, I think it's beautiful. So we take Daniel, then Ned.
Yeah, but what if they don't actually overlap? Like, for example, in the case of Gemara, I don't know, later where Ronnie eventually kind of conceded that he wouldn't give Agar Natira, but like in the beginning he was only willing to pay nothing.
Right.
So let's say he did budge on that, he was only willing to pay nothing. So
right.
What would the Pesira say you have to do in that case?
Right. So maybe if you don't come to any Pshara, then we'll go back to Daino Lechadin. Uh-huh. Right. But at least my point is just that the methodology of Pshara, meaning the methodology of Pshara that the Piskei Arid puts forth, is strongly coherent with what Rava actually suggests the amount to be in the case of Avodah Zarah.
I mean, Yes, but not necessarily. Like, as in, it only works. It works very well because in case of Ravina Rodia, the overlap is only one amount of single amount of just Agnatira. But let's say the overlap could have been a way larger range.
Right. What would he have done?
It's unclear what the Kiskeiru would say. You do.
True. But my point is that the pshara here should be defined by making the parties, by giving the parties what they're seeking, what they're truly seeking, right? Which is, I think, really a fascinating and insightful way of thinking about pshara. Most American lawyers like would have a heart attack seeing this because, what is the amount that a party is willing to settle for have to do with a judge resolving the dispute, right? There are two separate issues. How much would you settle for, and how much is he entitled to? And the pshara theory of the writ is just very fascinating in grounding one in the other. Matt?
The difference, though, is that in the Runya case, it's Ravina's taina is unclear. I mean, here it's clear that the toch taina pan, in our case, that there's some sort of kibbutz da'at that happens throughout the course of events. So it's not exactly the same.
Although I wonder if Ravina was only towing Dmei Agar Natira. Yeah, that's the discussion on the postgame in Simeon Yadayan. But at least you could read the writ nicely into our sugya, right? If you line up the stars the right way. Yeah, let's look at the Rambam quickly. So the Rambam Perush Mishnayos in Ksuvos says, what is pshara? He says, pshara means hamitzua bedavar. Hamitzua bedavar means like the medium. Kolomar haskama b'derech shalom. Some just peaceful, some good agreement that achieves peace. Again, the Rambam doesn't give us a methodology. He just says that that's broadly what pshara is aiming at and emphasizing the pshara dimension. All right? Okay, so far we've seen the Gemaras that say there are two different methods of dispute resolution, the Mechilta and the Gemara in Sanhedrin. And then we have these different theories in the Rishonim about what methodology should the Dayanim be using in Pshara. I think Gemara in Sanhedrin itself maybe is taking a stand on this. Ariel, you have a hand on this?
Yes, the Rambam's definition of Pshara is like, especially I guess at the end, he says, the mind of image in a low car, low clown, kosher. How does that fit in with the case of like not having one thing in front of the other, so then basically the Pshara is just going to be the whole person going to pay the other person?
How does it fit in? So it's neat. A din resolution would give one party the full right of way, and the other party would have to wait. So there's a full winner and a full loser. But here, there's a partial winner and partial loser. Right? One person gets to go first, but he's got to pay for it. The other person loses, but he gets some compensation for it. So you're finding like a golden mean, like an average. Yeah, that's mitsua. Mitsua is like an average mean. I think that's how we could explain that. The Gemara Sanhedrin. Yeah? Rami, you good?
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody else good so far?
Oh, sorry, yeah. The Runi case doesn't really count because he said he was closer, right?
What?
The Runi says Runi that this thing...
Oh, the number of people. Yeah, maybe, although maybe Rava had two people with him. You know, they just called it according to Rava. It's possible.
Okay.
Yeah, like Rava based DNA. So we turn now to the Gemara Sanhedrin above on my base. And we want to figure out whether pshara is a good thing or a bad thing or a harder thing. Right? So is pshara preferable or not preferable? Before you saw these sigyas, what would you have said? Shmuel? Yeah, I think the good yeshiva guy would say that pshara is awful. Right? It's a corruption of din. You're depriving somebody of their rights. No? Josh?
I guess I'm not a good yeshiva, but...
We won't even credit your testimony on that. So we have three views in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Osha b'Yosi Aglili says, Asar livtsoa, mechol habotzea hareza chote. So Rabbi Elazar ben Osha b'Yosi Aglili is a good yeshiva guy. Right? He says it's prohibited to do pshara, and anybody who does pshara is sinful. Rather, we should take Moshe Rabbeinu's Yikov Hadina Sahar. Din should reign supreme. Notice, Ned, he doesn't say that halacha should pierce the mountain. He says just din should pierce the mountain. seemingly contrasting din and pshara. So why is it prohibited to do pshara? So Rashi just points out, this is mishabo l'din. This means if you're a dayan and somebody comes to you with a dispute, it's absolutely prohibited for you to do pshara, according to this day in the Tanayim. Why is it prohibited? So we have two views out there. Piskei Rid says, what's wrong with it?
Gezel.
Yeah, it's a form of gezel. You're robbing somebody of their rights. What's their due under Jewish law? They're entitled to X. If you give them anything less as an X, less than X, then you're stealing just through the judicial system, right? Or the judiciary is stealing from you. You guys agree? I think that's a very clear theory. The thought being is that din allocates the rights, and a court that doesn't uphold your rights is robbing you of them, right? I think that's pretty straightforward. Very compelling argument. Nat, do you like this?
Yeah, when did he say, when he says shelo kadin, is that like shelo kadin or is that shelo kadin?
So, flesh that out for us.
I mean, is he saying it's just not right or is he saying it's not kadin?
Contrary to what the party would get under din.
Okay, so it's not the expression shelo kadin. It's just...
Well, isn't that the expression shelo kadin? Just means contrary to... What?
Maybe not. Maybe it's
just
not proper.
Uh-huh. So I think proper as defined by did.
Okay.
That's how I read this. Which makes sense, right? I think this is a very compelling view. What's the other view? How do you disagree with this view if it's so good? Who thinks this view is so good?
It's not guess if they agree.
What?
It's not guess if they agree to it.
Who agrees to it?
The litigants.
Ah, the litigants agree to it. Meaning if you get their consent afterwards,
then you have alternate pathways.
Then that modifies the rights in some way. Yeah, so if you get their consent, that's definitely helpful. Meaning what? Meaning if they ultimately agree to do pshara, it's not...
Yeah.
Right, because they're on board. Yeah. I think that's a good way of thinking about it. I want to come back to that thought. I think partially this turns on what you think the metaphysical state of the rights are before litigation. So do you think that the rights are determined and then they're to be, as you said? Let's hear. I want to hear this.
I don't remember the details, but I was arguing that.
That what?
The rights are decided before.
Yeah, meaning there's already a metaphysical fact of the matter about what your right is, and the court's there to uphold that, or to just implement that.
To find that out.
Just discover that. Yeah. Another way you might think of it, though, the contrary view, is that maybe when there's a dispute, right, really the metaphysical facts are indeterminate, to be determined by the court. And there are different ways that the court could determine it, either through din or through pshara. But you think of the metaphysical facts and rights as partially being determined by the judiciary, by the courts, not by some abstract system of law. Right? Or you might even say, part of the system of law is that the determination of the courts matter. Right? So... you might think that's relevant to this issue, possibly. Certainly the Piskei Arid himself thinks that these rights are determined. The court just has to implement them. And when they try to use a different methodology, they are stealing from you. Josh?
Doesn't the whole, like, ilu ve'ilu, like, all that kind of philosophical stuff kind of push the idea that, like, din is kind of...
indeterminate?
Yeah, like...
yeah, maybe. Or they might say... past determinations of what the halacha is makes the present decisions determined by the past ones. Right? So you might say...
like, they passed them in the past.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, you're right. At certain stages, all those things are indeterminate, but then they become determined along the way, and right, then the present court is locked into the determinations of the previous ones. That is a very interesting point. There's another way to think about the evils of pshara, not just in terms of gezel. What's the other way of thinking about the evils of pshara that you see in the Afronian?
Well,
What's that? What does that mean, Bitl Mitzvah Din? Tell us about it.
Yeah, like the role of a Bez Din is to do Din, right? To, their job, literally, is to fulfill the mitzvah of implementing Din. And the thought is when they do Pshara, they're violating their command, their duty to do implement Din in society. Correct? Okay. So you see that in the Meshech Chachma, he has this idea. Tana Damar also lived Tzoa, it's by Dina Yisrael, because they have a duty to be done al pidarkei HaTorah. Their job is rak ladun kidine HaTorah. Okay. And Shmuel Rozovsky says that also, that he says, Ha'isr livtzoa hum epnesha yesh mitzvah lekayim hadin, v'chsheoseh pshara eino oseh din. That's a very clear formulation, that the evil or the wrongfulness of pshara flows from failing to do din in the proper way. So those are two theories, right? You can think of, what's the difference between those two theories? The Gezel theory and the Din theory? The big one is the Din?
Gezel is that a party is wrong, the Din is
yeah.
This one is a party, it's just there happen to be a misunderstanding.
Great, meaning which party is the, who's the victim?
Yeah, is it Hashem or is it one of the people?
Yeah, is it like the Dayanim are failing in their own responsibility, or have they harmed this individual in some way? Yeah, so those are different ways of thinking about the wrongfulness of Shara.
Yeah, also, I think that our Rav Shmuel mentioned it, but like also affects when not coming to maybe perhaps is if there wasn't Dean yet, then Shara could work according to the digital and stuff.
Yeah.
So you're still stealing.
Yeah, good. So that's an interesting nafkamina we might come back to, actually. Yeah, really good point. Okay. So, I think that clock's right. So we have 3 minutes, 2 minutes? Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one view in the Gemara. We have a second view in the Gemara that says that Pshara and Din are just, Pshara is just a reshus. It's a license. You can see here. Reb Shimon ben Nasya says, two people come for you for Din. Before you know what the resolution is, Atarashai lomar lahensu vitzu. It's permissible for you to say, or to suggest Pshara. Okay, so Pshara and Din are maybe, neither is more preferred than the other. So it's at the discretion of a Dayan with no fundamental reason to favor one over the other, but it's at the discretion of the Dayan to choose which one. That's like Zachariah's Rashi, I think, right? There's really no principled reason to favor one over the other. That's an interesting view. Let's flesh it out more by the more extreme view. So Rabbi Shimon Karcha has a more radical position. What's his view? What's Rabbi Shimon Karcha's perspective? That there's a mitzvah livtzoa. Gets this from a pasuk in Zechariah. Emma, very famous pasuk, yeah? Ariel, you want to tell us about it? Emes mishpat u'shalom shifti b'sha'areichem. Right, so how do you have MS and Mishpat and Shalom together. Yeah, so what's Mishpat Sheyesh Bo Shalom? That's Pshara. It's the idea, and Rashi there says, similar to the Mechilta, that you know, it's possible for both people to leave happy when you have a good Pshara. So, what is a type of justice that incorporates peace? Pshara is your dispute resolution preference on. Right, Shara should be the favored method. See that? So how do you understand the view that it's a mitzvah to do Shara? What underlies this theory? What's the... Benji?
It's like a general, you know, like, good for society kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe it's better for society.
Kershav to you, maybe, or something.
Yeah, or it's just... It's good to have a peaceful society, right?
And we actually tried to like narrow in, like, oh, what is the mitzvah? And we're like, oh, yeah, we don't know. Like,
meaning, what is the mitzvah of Shalom?
Right, like, is it a kiyum of like some sort of mitzvah better than chavero? Is, and we're like, eh, you know, it's more like, oh, it's like a mitzvah, and like it's a positive.
Ah, ah.
Yeah, it's a positive thing to do. Anybody want to say more about this? Josh?
I mean, just if we go before that, the point of din is to do, like, resolution, then we can say that this fits into the same thing.
Yeah. And in part, you might wonder, like, what's the, you know, the whole, maybe the laws of society are there to create a peaceful, functioning society. So it's reasonable to think that shalom is at the heart of that. Right? The tour in his Akadama to Koshi Mishpat talks about the importance of din, because without din, society would be destroyed, there'd be no peace, right? Because you need rules and laws. Anybody want to share another thought about the importance, what this shita is getting at? Mishpat sheyesh lo shalom. So, pshara is preferable on this view, right? Because it brings about shalom. Does anybody have a worry that if we paskin in this way, which we saw the Rishonim, it seems like we do paskin in this way, so there are different theories about exactly what this entails. So does any of you think that this raises problems for why we have a system of din?
Nat? If din does a really bad job at doing shalom on its own, then what is it purpose to serve?
Yeah. Anybody share Nat's concern? Yeah, Romy, you share Nat's concern? Kobe, you don't share the concern?
No, why not? But Romy does. Because I think it's okay to say that we have some sort of like baseline din for everything, and like that's it for what we did, but we still have this other goal of shalom, so like, convince people to do the shalom thing, that's good, but in order for the society to like, function, you still need like, this, like, din, this din, like a system of din that we don't know what to rely on.
Ah, it's like a backup.
So I call it more like a foundation.
So tell us the difference in a foundation and a backup.
Din is kind of like the foundation, meaning it's sort of a backup, it's kind of like in the back of my mind, I always know that I can like, function in society, because I always know that the worst comes to worst,
there's din.
There's din. But it doesn't mean our end goal is din, our end goal is really shalom. Yeah. So, convince people to like, get people to like, do shalom, like, do shavas, and
yeah.
Right here. It doesn't cause anything.
It's almost like in our case on Daf Hei, you need the threat of Ilav Danino Lacha Ke Drahuna in order to make sure that the guy agrees to the pshara, maybe. I would go even further and say, even when you're doing pshara, pshara presupposes that there are antecedent rights and obligations and entitlements that are assigned, and then you're supposed to do a pshara based off, you know, how egregious was the violation of those rights? What's a fair settlement for the violation of those rights allocated by din? So you always need any pshara is still going to depend on some antecedent conception of rights and wrongs, and you need to appeal to those rights and wrongs to do a good pshara, even. Right? So, you can't have pshara without din, not just as a backup, but even more than that, right? It's the equities or the fairness of a pshara will depend on the allocation of rights under din. Ned, will give you the last word.
I think that with the shita tea, the principle that governs pshara could derive from not. From somewhere outside of din. So there are other broader Torah principles that could motivate.
Like shalom. Or whatever.
Shalom, whatever, yeah. That stand outside of din proper. Yeah. Also, another point I wanted to just raise was like sort of similar. The idea that you can have certain dinim that result in negative consequences for particular individuals. I think Rabbi Yehuda Rahman writes about similar things where he said that halacha is legislated on the societal level. And
yeah, that's. Yeah, exactly. We'll see some of that in the discussion later on also, in these sources, 100%. So it's like, din can get the bad answer in some cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's very interesting. We're going to come back to that for sure. But I really just want to stress, especially if you hold Ned. So if you hold mitzvah with tzoa, so do you think there are non-halachic mitzvahs?
There are mitzvahs that are rooted in non-halachic considerations.
Are there non-halachic mitzvahs? I just want to push that because I think, right, this is clearly a provision in my mind that, like, the halacha is that it's preferable to do pshara. So we just want to push that against to fit pshara nicely into the framework of Koshi Mishpat and Shulchan Aruch. We could quibble about how much din there is in pshara versus other things, But I think it clearly fits firmly within this framework of, you know, halakhic dina. Yeah? Okay, so we're going to stop here. On Tuesday, we will just survey the lefnim yishuras hadin component, the distinction between pshara with the consent of the parties, without the consent of the parties, and then we'll move on to the discussion in Siman Yud Zayin. All right? Yeah? Great, Scott.